Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. This is Phantom Nation, an internet radio program bearing the same name as the book called Phantom Nation, Inventing the Palestinians as the Obstacle to Peace, available on Amazon, currently in a Kindle ebook and three-volume paperback version, but at the end of the month, it will be replaced by a two-volume hardcover box set that will cost twice as much, so buy it now. The new Kindle version will also be more expensive. Well, this week's edition, we'll review last week's hurly-burly in Israel, being aggressed against by tens of thousands of anti-Semitic Arab Muslims, and Israel's response and the behavior of the ever-anti-Jew United Nations Human Rights Council and other anti-Jews, including Jewish anti-Jews. Anti-Jewism is an equal opportunity hatred. You don't have to be a Gentile to hate Jews. We do not lack for such anti-Jew Jews and never have. Heck, we have a whole newspaper called Haaretz, which used to be a Zionist newspaper. Haaretz means the land, as in land of Israel, but today is the enemy of Zionism that held high the banner representing the right of the Jewish people and only the Jewish people to call this country its homeland. Today, by contrast, Haaretz wants Israel to hand over the heart of the promised land of Israel. Haaretz seems to think it's the land of Ishmael, no less. Well, we'll also transform the nasty charge that Israeli soldiers committed a massacre last Monday into its opposite, an exemplar of a truly civilized army evidenced by this operation. We'll also question the behavior of one Jewish ignoramus after another, opining on things they know nothing about, like what is excessive in the use of violence in the face of tens of thousands of wild asses of men who, if they have the chance, would revel in slaughtering as many defenseless Jews as possible. We'll turn the tables by suggesting that Israel's taking down of 62 wild asses of men a week ago has worked to squelch the riots. Israel has therefore performed an act of mercy in killing off the ones they did. Not to mention the extraordinary skill of Israel's military spotters and marksmen. And we'll get started after the following message from Israel News Talk Radio.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. This is Phantom Nation, an internet radio program bearing the same name as the book called Phantom Nation, Inventing the Palestinians as the Obstacle to Peace, available on Amazon currently in a Kindle ebook and three-volume paperback version, but at the end of the month, that will morph into a two-volume box set hardcover edition that will cost twice as much, so buy it now. The new Kindle edition will also cost more. It's the second day, Zion Besid, Bahashas Naso, Tavshin Ayin Ches 5778, the first day, Monday, 21 May, 2018, podcasting from the Center of World Metaphysics, the focus of world anti-Jewry. For example, the 47 nations of the UN Human Rights Council, who meet once a month in Geneva to discuss human rights in various countries, but always, every time. Unique among the UN's 193 member states, the UNHRC discusses the chronic crucifixion of the allegedly archaic Palestinian people whose country the Jews stole from them. So the news today, in HRC's decision to investigate the behavior of the Jews last week and in recent weeks, over six Fridays now, I think, some 87 Muslims, mistakenly called Palestinians when there's nothing Palestinian about them, were killed by the Jews. A week ago today, 60 of them out of the 40,000 who came to threaten, curse, and attack Jews with stones, flaming bottles, bombs, and the ambition to get through the barrier into the Jewish communities on the other side to murder Jews at random. 60 fatalities were called a massacre. Well, that was plainly wrong. They were killed not as a group, but individually, each one separately by an Israeli sniper, given the okay by a superior officer each time to shoot to kill because the target had been identified as a leader of the riot, mistakenly called by today's anti-Jews as a peaceful protest demonstration. A massacre is the shooting of a mass, and sniping is the antithesis of that. What happened, for example, in the ravine called Babi Yar in Ukraine in 1941, when Germans, with whom the Arabs were in active collaboration, forced 30,000 Jews into that depression and raked them with gunfire? Helpless, innocent, non-threatening Jews were shot dead, just for being Jews. Versus what happened a week ago here, when each execution targeted a criminal, an alien organizing violence against our defense installation. Of the 62 fatalities, 50 were admitted by the Muslim Brotherhood to have been their operatives. So instead of tongue-lashing our skilled and deliberate officers and marksmen as murderers like Bernie Sanders or Dianne Feinstein, that pseudo-Jewess, all Jews should swell with pride at the restraint and skill a week ago. The enlightened were horrified by this massacre. That was no massacre, but 60 individual pinpoint strikes, with the critics never stopping to marvel that it was only 62 out of 40,000. Israel could have, on the very first days of these riots, raked the front line in a true massacre, killing perhaps 20, which in the long run might have been more beneficial for everyone concerned. It might have saved 40 lives if Israel had killed 20 on the first day. For it appears that following the alleged massacre a week ago today, the next day, 90% of those who were in attendance on Bloody Monday did not return. They know Israel means business. In other words, there's a connection between Monday's death and Tuesday, when only two homicidal Muslim maniacs were put down by IDF snipers like rabid dogs. And likewise, the day after that and the day after that, Wednesday, Thursday, and even the first Friday of Ramadan, and yesterday, the Sabbath, Gulnish mit Gulnish, nothing, with nothing. And nobody was killed, I think, on those days. Last night, after the holy day had completed, and I had been 2 days without news of anything. I expected to check the news online and hear of the latest riots, but there was no such news. And the reason, according to one report, was that following Bloody Monday and the opportunity of world anti-Jewry to spit their hatred at the Jews, as they have in every generation, the message by the F conveyed to the leaders of Hamas and Gaza was more or less, my wording, of course, either you end these riots or we will upgrade our response and target not only your boys at the barrier, but you. We will do to you what we did to Sheikh Yassin and a long list of others. We will pack you off to Muslim paradise. And what do you know, like a sudden summer rainstorm that comes and goes quickly and suddenly, there's quiet along the barrier. It is possible these last few weeks that this generation's version of Intifada, and so far it has been nothing compared to those other eruptions of satanic violence by these homicidal Hamites, remains like a spiritual malaria that comes and goes. This is the latest eruption, and it won't be the last, of their need to strike out and murder Jews. In Israel, there's a feeling that the army and the government were remiss in responding to the outbreak of Israel hatred, this one, and one reason for that may be the difficulty Israelis have in facing up to the violence of the Muslims and the hatred of the post-Christian MSM worldwide. These media outlets who portray the Muslims in Gaza as our victims, because after all they are the ones who got shot commonly in the legs and 62 times from the waist up. The New York Times, BBC, Guardian, CNN, that's what they saw. It's difficult for Israelis to accept that what they're faced with is what Zionism was meant to defeat and failed. lunatic Jew hatred, a.k.a. anti-Semitism. Now, all the respect, all the kavod to the post-religious Zionists who founded this extraordinarily gifted and successful spark plug of a state, but one major purpose of the enterprise of the Zionist state was to put an end to anti-Semitism, so-called, a word that was a deceitful lie the minute it was invented in the mid-19th century. What we have witnessed in the recent weeks of the Gaza riots is nothing less than this generation's version of Jew hatred, which is like every generation's. It's all functionally delusional. The anti-Jew's vision is distorted and clouded, thanks to his hatred of the people who gave the world the idea of the one God interested in ethics, versus pagan gods who never did care about ethics. The people who, besides creating their own religion and culture and nation, gave birth to more than a billion Christians and a billion Muslims. That's who everybody hates. The UNHRC, not surprisingly, wants to investigate Israel's behavior in this violence, and not that of the boys with the slingshots, the boys throwing flaming bottles of gasoline at Israeli soldiers, or placing bombs against Israeli property, launching fire kites, the people who brought children to these riots. The Arabs claim, on the basis of no evidence, that it would be admissible in a court of law to be the descendants of the Canaanites. They are nonetheless entitled to make the claim because they're so much like them. The Canaanites were into human sacrifice and children in a sacrifice to Moloch. Last week, the anti-Jews had the story of an infant allegedly killed by Israeli tear gas, which was not only denied by the baby's physician, but no one in the MSM asked the question, what kind of parents carry an infant into such a situation as a riot, where there are frisky youth or igniting piles of tires and poisoning their own air? The behavior of these Muslims, the numerous visuals of the Arab boys here using the identical slingshots used here thousands of years ago, these pictures speak volumes. How primitive, how archaic in their behavior, and above all their thinking, and their mistaken belief that the Jews stole their land. Last week there was a most useful opinion piece in the New York Times by one Ahmed Abu Ratima, who lives in Rafah at the southern end of the Gaza rectangle. And here are his first two sentences, quote, "The seed that grew into Gaza's Great Return March was planted just a few days after President Trump announced he would recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Palestinians long have held onto the dream of Jerusalem as our own capital, or at least as a shared capital in a country that offers equal rights to everyone." And in this, we have an excellent specimen of the innate larceny of the Arabs and an implied, inarticulate wish to destroy Israel. And after our first musical interlude, we will vivisect the anti-Jewism here in this New York Times op-ed. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
So we left off with this New York Times op-ed piece last week by a Mr. Abu Ratima from Rafah, who made the claim that, quote, the Palestinians long have held onto the dream of Jerusalem as our own capital, close quote. But he did not say for how long they have had this dream, this vision. By contrast, we Jews every day for thousands of years in our thrice daily prayers and other blessings have had Jerusalem on our lips. We pray in the direction of Jerusalem and started doing that long before the Arabs burst out of the Arabian Peninsula after stealing Jewishness, perverting it, and calling it Islam. This Arabian gentleman from Rabah wrote that Palestinians have long envisioned Jerusalem as the capital of this state, and I want to know for how long. In 1920, their leader, Haji Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti in Jerusalem, said there was no such country as Palestine. Jerusalem, he said, was located in southern Syria, whose capital was Damascus. Indeed, that year, Haji Amin motored the 135 miles from Jerusalem to Damascus to attend the coronation of Faisal as king of Syria, in which Jerusalem was located, he said. For the first biblical generation of 40 years after the launch of the Palestine Mandate, whose explicit purpose was creating a Palestine that never existed under Muslim rule as the historic Jewish homeland, that was the language that Haji Amin could not accept. There was no Palestine, he said, only southern Syria, whose capital is Damascus. So what you're listening to here in Mr. Abu Ratima pining for Jerusalem as the Palestinians' capital is nothing less than the Arabs' hunger for what does not belong to them. He has plagiarized the emotion engendered by Yehuda Halevi, who was born almost 1,000 years ago in Tudela, Spain, where he wrote in a famous poem, quote, my heart is in the east and I am in the farthest west. These Arabs, because they are traditionally in vast numbers illiterate, have no past to wax nostalgic over, so they literally steal the Jewish past, steal the Jewish heart. They pine for Jerusalem as their capital. But if so, why was the Arab Jerusalem I entered in 1967 after the Six-Day War a S-hole of a dirty town? Nostalgia is Greek for homesickness, and here's an Arab stealing the homesickness of the Jews, for which we were famous for over 2,000 years. Who in history ever heard of a Palestinian pining for Jerusalem? Versus the Jews who every ninth of Av in the summer burst into tears in their remembrance of the Jerusalem they were exiled from. This Arab thief in his op-ed also spoke of going for a walk with a friend after President Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. He wrote of feeling betrayed and distressed by the decision and wrote, quote, to clear my head, my friend Hassan and I took a walk along the border, which we do every now and then. I said to Hassan, there lies our land, as I looked at the trees on the other side of the barbed wire fence that confines us. And yet, because of that fence and the soldiers who guard it, it is so far away, close quote. And I say this, too, is just intolerable. I looked at the trees. There lies our land. And I say, Ahmed, give me a break. The trees you saw are Jewish trees, paid for by Jews, who bought and pay and planted the saplings by hand on land the Jews bought legally at inflated prices from distant landlord owners who thought the Jews were being stupid for paying so much money for bad land with no trees on it. Ahmed, the land is not yours, and for sure neither are the trees. And if you don't believe me, there are photographs and paintings of the Holy Land done in the 19th century before the Zionist resurrection of the old sod began, and the desolation here is plain to see. Look at the cover of my book, which is an 1859 painting of Jerusalem, which displays a city 100% within the Turkish walls with nothing but barren hillsides outside of them. The New York Times today calls traditionally Arab East Jerusalem. This is what the New York Times says about the Arab settlement east of the walled city In truth, traditionally, there was no Arab East Jerusalem. The name did not exist, and there were no Arabs living there. This painting makes perfectly clear the absence of such an Arab East Jerusalem before Zionism. Indeed, even earlier, in 1840, the Turks, for political reasons at the time, allowed Western Christians to visit the Holy Land for the first time since the Crusades, and those who did wrote of the land's desolation. There was no Palestinian people, no Palestinian community, never a government of Palestinians governing Palestine. There was no Palestinian army, but don't tell that to the New York Times. That prints these anti-Semitic delusions of so-called Palestinians who in our time have stolen the ancient Jewish longing for this land and this city, and insist no less upon an identical and even superior right to the land and the city. This anti-Jew in Rafah also described the last month at the barrier as, quote, peaceful demonstrations. He spoke of Israel's cruel, deadly violence in response to these, quote, peaceful protesters. Above all, he repeated the lie that 70 years ago, Palestinians were expelled from their homes. No, they weren't. They ran away and invented the charge of expulsion to cover up their cowardice, their shame at losing to the hated Jews. But even more distressing than the whining of these Arabs and the hatred in Europe directed at us for our alleged massacre of peaceful Palestinians, what was also pathetic were the anti-Jews of Jewish extraction last week. The opinionators in the newspaper in Haaretz in Israel were positively apoplectic with shame at what the IDF was doing in Gaza. They sounded just like the UNHRC. And then there were the anti-Jew Jews in exile, like a one front-page opinionator in the International New York Times called Michelle Goldberg, whose column I found to be a masterpiece of cliches strung together about Israel without one original idea in sight. She and many others took note of the simultaneity of Ivanka Trump presiding at the inauguration of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem and the surgical precision of our sniper teams. God bless them. Only for such as Michelle Goldberg, the contrast was embarrassing, even grotesque. And beside the clash of images of, on the one hand, people celebrating the embassy inauguration in Jerusalem, and on the other, the violence in Gaza, she insisted, sounding exactly like that Arab thief in Rafah, stealing our age-old connection to Jerusalem, she wrote that the recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital was, quote, widely seen as a slap in the face to Palestinians who envision East Jerusalem as their future capital, close quote. Now, given the demographic holocaust of Jews in the U.S. in recent decades, thanks to the intermarriage rate among the non-observant, the odds are no longer what they were when a woman named Goldberg was presumed to be Jewish. Today, you never know. But even if she is not, it doesn't matter, Gentile or Jew, the odds are high that she knows next to nothing of Jews in Jerusalem, Muslims and Islam, Jews living under Muslims for over 1,000 years. Here, just like the Arab in Rafah, she cites, quote, Palestinians envisioning East Jerusalem as their capital, with no awareness that this is a hunger for what does not belong to them. She accepts unquestioningly their vision of East Jerusalem as their capital and never questions their right to this desire. I ask, by what right do they have to want to deprive us Jews of our capital and holy city? This presumably assimilated post-religious Jewess is an ignoramus who has assimilated the paranoid anti-Jew mindset that sees in President Trump's embassy decision a slap in the face to these so-called Palestinians. Bibi and Donald put their heads together and asked the question, how can we slap the Palestinians in the face? Presumably just for the sake of doing that. And one said to the other, hey, I got an idea. Let's move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. That will really be a stinging slap in the face to the Palestinians. That's why it was done in the mind of Michelle Goldberg. She also referred to, quote, mass protests in response to, quote, an escalating humanitarian crisis due in large part to an Israeli blockade. Woman knows nothing. I doubt this anti-Jew Jewess knows that every day hundreds of semi-trailers drive into the strip carrying everything that people find in stores. And why do almost 1,000 trucks every day do this? Because the people in Gaza produce nothing. They do not produce enough to sustain life for the 1.5 million people who live there, 70% of them on the UN dole. This idiot also likely does not know that the real blockade is at the southern end of the strip controlled by the Egyptians. They are the Gazans' jailers, not Israel.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Shalom from the heartland of Israel. This is David Ha'ivri. Join me every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 o'clock Eastern, for A Hebrew in the Heartland on Israel News Talk Radio. Hear the news and views from the heartland of Israel every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time. Be there.
Yeah, last week I saw an eruption here, not only of classic anti-Jew sneering by Gentiles, but also anti-Jew Jews, like Ms. Goldberg in The Times writing in that perennially anti-Israel publication. Of course, in politically correct fashion, she accused Israel of using, quote, disproportionate violence, though she did not cite her experience in managing similar situations in which 40,000 aspiring murderers want to enter your community and murder your people at random. What her qualifications are for passing this judgment were not detailed. Likewise, the actress-singer Bette Midler, born a Jewess, piped up against the behavior of our sons and officers, defending all those socialist communards, the kibbutzniks, and their families who lived next door to the barrier, and neither was the source of the intel identified on the situation at the barrier, presumably delivered to Ms. Midler, presumably in Hollywood. I suppose it is possible that unbeknownst to her fans, Bette Midler only moonlights as a singer-actress. Her real job may be, who knows, lecturer in counterinsurgency at the RAND Corporation in Santa Monica, or perhaps she lectures at the U.S. Marine Base at Quantico in Virginia. Little is known of her expertise in how soldiers should react to being pelted with flaming bottles of gasoline. In any case, Bette Midler also felt herself sufficiently knowledgeable to pass judgment on the behavior of our soldiers, the snipers. In her cliché-driven dithyram to the victims of Zionism, Michelle Goldberg also referred to Nakba Day as the day that, quote, the Palestinians commemorate their dispossession. This dispossession is another anti-Jew lie that she has swallowed like a communion wafer. One can only wonder how many books on Israel's War of Independence and the previous century in Eretz Yisrael of Zionist restoration that she has read? Probably none, because the best historians make perfectly clear there was no mass dispossession. There were a couple of smaller ones, Jaffa and Ramla. In Jaffa, the port, the Arabs had to be conquered militarily. There was a battle they resisted. They had to be subdued. Some were killed, others fled the fighting, and the IDF did nothing to stop them. Still others never left, and so Jaffa remains significantly Arab to this day. And in the case of Ramla, not far away, the only town worthy of the definition town in more than a millennium of Muslim rule that the Muslims built, it too had to be taken. It was because it was close to the main road between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and because of its proximity to the country's one international airport, it had to be taken, evacuated, and it was none other than that young socialist Yitzhak Rabin in charge of the operation. He drove out maybe 30,000 Arabs from their homes, out of the 590,000, all told. Goldberg wrote of Gazans, quote, demanding the right to return to homes in Israel that their families were forced from at Israel's founding. And again, the ignorance here is intolerable. Maybe 10% of the UN refugees had any roots in Palestine. 90% were migrant workers from all over Arabi. Today, in 2018, some 140,000 Arabs in Judea and Samaria work in Jewish businesses in Israel, and so it was in 1948 that hundreds of thousands of illiterate migrant workers worked here too. Men with no immovable property to defend or worry about for them, evacuating a war zone for what they imagined would be at the most 3 or 4 days it would take for the Arab armies to kill all the Jews and conquer the country, after which they could remain and loot it. Fleeing for them was an easy decision. And then there was the ostensibly Orthodox Jew opinionator here in Israel, in Haaretz, B. Michael, referring to, quote, unarmed demonstrators who found their death by the unrestrained rifles of snipers, close quote. This veteran jerk in that newspaper called Donald Trump, quote, a racist lecher, homophobe, misogynist, a coarse and inveterate liar, close quote. Netanyahu, likewise, he called a, quote, chauvinist, a toady, a cynic, an inciter, demagogue, and liar, whose talent for mendacity is equal to that of his friend from overseas, close quote. He also called fellow Israelis the most, quote, monstrous, tyrannical occupiers in the world, and he called settlers greedy, unrestrained, wild men, close quote. In other words, in both countries, they're so much alike now, the U.S. and Israel. The men in power at the top are the objects of hysterical, delusional fantasies percolating in the heads of their political rivals. I imagine one factor in this behavior is the collapse of liberalism and socialism altogether after some 3 centuries. These people have no rational alternative to the policies that both men pursue, so all they have is name-calling. Chauvinist, toady, cynic. Nothing of any substance, facts, and logic here. And then there was the wretched front page last week of the New York Daily News, last Wednesday, contrasting Ivanka Trump at the inauguration in Jerusalem with the Muslim violence in Gaza. They illustrated the photograph on the front page with a text that was jaw-droppingly rude, calling Ivanka a ghoul, G-H-O-U-L, for presiding at this gala occasion in the very moments Israeli soldiers were allegedly murdering innocent, peaceful Palestinian patriots who cry themselves to sleep every night over the country the Jews stole from them. And it was interesting, maybe even ironic, that the word ghoul is Arabic and refers to folkloric humanoids who feast on dead bodies. Clearly, the Muslims have an obsession with death, likely dating from the age of the pharaohs and their monumental tombs, a.k.a. the pyramids. The central text of pharaonic religion was called the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and for sure the desire to get to Muslim paradise is central to their practice of suicide bombing. How ugly and wrong was the Daily News to call her a ghoul when the ghouls of Arab Islam were trying to break through the barrier around Gaza in hopes of being able to plunge their knives and daggers into innocent Jewish bodies. And then there was that other anti-Jew of Jewish extraction who I saw for a few seconds only on TV on CNN or MSNBC, I forget which. Little LTF, little Tommy Friedman of the New York Times, snarling at President Trump for his terrible decision to move the embassy to Jerusalem. Friedman is just simply pathetic. He is a slave to his out-of-control compulsive need every time he talks about Israel to spit his anti-Israel venom, lest anti-Jews accuse him of dual loyalty. Without his Israel bashing, little Tommy Friedman would never have had the career he has. Last week, on a Facebook page of the so-called Great March of Return, when of course there never was a march, only a riot, the page urged participants to, quote, bring a knife, a dagger, a gun, to kidnap Israeli civilians and murder soldiers and settlers, close quote. And it is Ivanka Trump who is likened to a ghoul by the Daily News. Shame on them. And of course, no mention was made of this post by the Daily News, let alone that in context, the use of the term settlers on this webpage refers not to Jews living in Judea and Samaria and the Golan Heights, and of course not in the walled city of Jerusalem, but the kibbutzniks in the communes on the other side of the barrier, whose fields abut the barrier and have been torched by the Arabs with their fire kites and helium balloons, setting fires that are also potentially life-threatening. This was the killing of settlers who have been in their communities for decades, long before the 1948 war. This latest eruption of mass violence like an intifada has been most shocking for the responses of anti-Jew Gentiles and Jewish ones alike. It's so plainly a situation in which the Arabs aggress against Israel's internationally recognized frontier installation using potentially lethal force, calling for the murder of Israelis. Israel defends itself with consummate restraint, and it is Israel that is sneered at for its excessive use of violence. As I said before, Israelis did not handle this latest aggression well from a PR standpoint because they still have trouble seeing it for what it is, this generation's version of Jew hatred. Wrapped in deceitful delusions about Israel's alleged criminal use of violence, versus the violence of the other side, about which the critics of Israel say nothing. It is no accident that not one Israeli leader over the past few weeks has charged anti-Semitism to the Arabs, and certainly to the MSM and UNHRC. Theirs is the face of anti-Semitism in our time, though Israelis cannot or will not confront the truth. That Zionism, when it comes to anti-Semitism, has failed. Big time. Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Phantom Nation, named for the book of the same name, Inventing the Palestinians as the Obstacle to Peace, available on Amazon and in a Kindle ebook and 3-volume paperback version. But at the end of the month, it will morph into a 2-volume box set hardcover edition that will cost twice as much. Today's music was by Simply Tzfat and Mickey Rosenbaum, and as always, Yosef Karduner. Until next time. I'm Shai Betekoa. Moshiach Yomoy Lissakin Esoilom Esoilom Gunoy Moshiach Yomoy Moshiach Yomoy Lissakin Esoilom Esoilom Gunoy
Vahashem Ivne Beito Vahashem Ivne Beito Hashut sham shchinat, shchinat kotcho. Vahashem ivne beito, Vahashem ivne beito. Lehashut sham shchinat, shchinat kotcho. Mashiach yavo, oh, Mashiach yavo, oh. Ha'olam et ha'olam kulo Hayai Mashiach yavo Oh, Mashiach yavo Oh, letaken et ha'olam
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Carr from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio. Straight talk from Israel.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.